Ciao a tutti e tutte, siamo due compagni del gruppo anarchico Carlo Cafiero della Federazione Anarchica Italiana di Roma e siamo qui per presentarvi innanzitutto per darvi un appuntamento che è quello di domenica 30 novembre per un'iniziativa insieme ai compagni curdi. Questa iniziativa ci sarà dalle ore 19 allo spazio anarchico 19 luglio in via Rocco da Cesinale 18, metro B Garbatella, in cui ci sarà una cena incontro e ci saranno dei report, delle dirette con compagni che sono appena tornati dal Turchia Kurdistan e con i compagni turchi. Ci sarà uno spazio libri e informazioni su quanto sta accadendo in Kurdistan e come si sta organizzando la solidarietà. E oggi saremo in diretta telefonica con un compagno, con il compagno Zahir Baer dell'Aringhei Solidarity Group e Kurdistan Anarchist Forum. E Zahir Baer è autore di un articolo già pubblicato nel settembre 2014 sul sito Las Barricadas e sul sito di Anarchistan. Questo articolo parlava di come l'esperimento in Turchia Kurdistan e in Kurdistan dimostri come il popolo, la gente, con le proprie lotte, con le proprie battaglie, riesca a cambiare la realtà. E questo Zahir è tornato da poco, ha fatto parte di una delegazione che è stata giù dal 2 novembre scorso all'8 novembre e ha scritto un nuovo articolo, un report dell'esperienza che ha avuto. E di nuovo questo articolo è pubblicato sul sito www.anarchistan.org e oggi Zahir sarà nostro ospite in diretta e ci parlerà appunto di questa sua esperienza ultima che ha avuto in Turchia Kurdistan. Hello, Zahir?
Yes, I am with you, yeah. Hello?
Hello, yes, sorry, man. And so we are on Radio Onda Rossa from Rome, and we know that you were one of the delegation to Turkey, Kurdistan on November. Do you want to talk us about this?
Yeah. Sorry, the line is not very clear. You know that. So you would like me to talk about my traveling to Turkey? Yes.
Yes. Your delegation.
Yeah. Okay. What happened? I'm in here. Kurdistan peace campaign and also Kurdistan National Congress, they decided in Europe basically to send some delegation from different countries to visit the Turkish Kurdistan and also the border of Kobani, or border of Turkey, which is a neighbor of Kobani. And the purpose of this visit basically for the people like us, the delegation, to see what happened there and also to be informed about the current situation there and all the changes has been done or made there. And on the top of that, if we can actually see the situation about what we can do when we're coming back about the campaign, especially for the refugees, people came from Kobani and Sinjar, which is Sinjar is a part of Iraqi Kurdistan when ISIS occupied Mosul, and after that they attacked the Yazidis in that particular region, and they slaughtered so many of them. So that was the purpose of that. So from every country, they basically announced that who wanted to go among those people, among the socialists and anarchists and the trade unions. From here, they suppose two delegation goes, one of them on second and the second one of eight. I was one of the one. I went on 2nd of November, I mean this month, with the four more people, which is three of them. They were trade unionists, two women and two men, and also myself, and the other one is a feminist, an ex-feminist woman, and in the same time she is a union rep.
Zahir, if I stop you, but we must translate in Italian.
Sì,
okay.
Il compagno Zahir ha detto che stanno partendo numerose delegazioni che si appoggiano sul Congresso Nazionale Curdo per andare lì nella zona di confine, nel Kurdistan turco, soprattutto per vedere qual è la situazione, per visitare i campi profughi. Con profughi sia da Rojava, da Kobani, che dal Sinjar, dal Kurdistan iracheno, per informare la gente su quello che sta accadendo lì. La delegazione con cui è partita il 2 novembre, è tornata l'8, ed era composta principalmente da 5 persone, dello stesso Zahir, da 2 uomini e da 2 donne che erano delle compagne anarcofemministe.
Okay, Zahir.
Okay. When we went there, basically, we have seen so many people because we had the plan and we had the program to see. We stayed for 6 days and 5 days. Obviously, we saw different departments and different people, different organizations, different union, and also we saw the refugees come next to Kobani on the border. They are from Kobani, and again we saw one of the camp. We visited one of the camp in Amed, Diyarbakir. They are came from Sinjar. They are Yazidis people, and also we have seen the co-mayor of Diyarbakir of municipalities, and also the Srus. The little town, the little sea on the border. So in all this, basically, they explain the situation there, and especially about the current attack by the ISIS on Kobani, and also some of them they were talking how the situation in Turkey got worse. In fact, instead of getting better. And they say that almost the peace process has been yet is not any more progress. But some of the human rights, especially the Bar Association of the Advocate, they believe that by next year will be better the situation because they think that the constitution in Turkey will be changed, and after that the peace process obviously will be started, and so that is creating a new situation for the Kurdish people in Turkey. And also we saw the trade union and how they work and how they have a contact with the local groups, and again with the some of the trade union in Britain and in other European countries and also in Middle East. So one thing is it's important that the trade union is there, basically all this organization, almost about 40% of their members, they were women. And again, I mean, the co-head of the union, or the co-president of the union, woman. And when we went to Sousse on the border, we by chance we saw the co-president of Kobani came there, and she introduced herself when we had a meeting there, and she said that she's been there for a couple of weeks, and that couple of weeks she came to do some work in Turkey, Kurdistan, and also to see the refugees, how they get in on, whether they are okay or not. And she was talking about, basically, she was talking about the situation in Kobani and how the people resisting the ISIS's attack. And also she mentioned that two daughters, they are a part of the resistance with the YPJ. I mean, the women protected units. All these people, we saw them, they mentioned that there are so many local groups and how the things has changed, especially after the ceasefire or after the PKK entered the process or peace process. I think it's completely changed, and now people trying to organize themselves in the local groups, on the commune and committee. And we have seen so many of them, especially women movement, independent women movement. And we had a meeting with them, and we had a meeting with the group also. Has been set up to defend the families, detainees. I mean, those families, they have children. They've been imprisoned or detained by the Turkish government. So they were talking about what happened there, basically, especially during the couple of days on 6th of October and 7th of October this year, when the people came from Kobani, the refugees, and Turkish soldiers, they didn't let to get in Turkey, and how basically the demonstration happened, and extended to almost all the Kurdish city and apart from other city in Turkey. And during that time, about 43 people, which is about 12 of them, they were children and unfortunately been killed. And also, in two police officers were killed, and many people have been injured, and more than 1,000 people have been detained, and still some of them still in prison or in detention has not been really released yet. Yes. You wanted to translate it?
Yes, thank you. Ricordo che Zaher è stato membro di una delegazione che è partita dal Regno Unito, e questa delegazione, ripeto, che è stata giù dal 2 novembre all'8 novembre, era organizzata dalla campagna di pace in Kurdistan, dal PIK, dal Partito Democratico Popolare HDP e dal Congresso della Società Democratica DTK. E durante questa visita hanno incontrato organizzazioni tra cui partiti politici, sindacati locali e regionali, il cosindaco di Diyarbakir e Suruç, il coordinamento degli aiuti umanitari ai profughi, campi profughi, villaggi ai confini di Kobani, i rappresentanti dei movimenti delle donne libere e delle associazioni per i diritti umani, i rappresentanti del Partito Democratico Regionale, l'associazione degli avvocati di Diyarbakir ed infine l'incontro con la federazione delle famiglie dei detenuti.
Poi il compagno ha parlato anche della situazione lì, cioè hanno incontrato molte organizzazioni, come ha detto prima la compagna, anche perché ci sta una situazione abbastanza pesante, cioè ci stanno i campi profughi sia a Suruç che a Torre di Diyarbakir. Nel frattempo c'è stato un nuovo inizio delle lotte dei curdi turchi e quindi ci sono stati violenti scontri, molta gente in prigione, anche morti durante gli scontri.
Zaher ci ha parlato anche di alcuni dati riportati dall'associazione AHD, in cui ci ha confermato che la polizia ha arrestato molte persone in Turchia nella manifestazione dal 6 ottobre al 7 ottobre, delle manifestazioni contro il governo turco e l'autorità turca. E inoltre che migliaia di persone sono fuggite da Kobani verso la Turchia contro la volontà del governo turco. E le manifestazioni erano contro la politica silenziosa dello Stato della Turchia, che sta sostenendo lo Stato islamico, e il portavoce di questa associazione umanitaria AHD ha confermato che soli 5 minuti prima del loro arrivo della delegazione alcune persone sono arrivate nel loro ufficio per informarli che i loro figli di età compresa tra i 16 e i 17 anni erano stati portati via dalla polizia, e del fatto che informati che durante la manifestazione 42 persone e 2 poliziotti erano stati uccisi, 1128 persone erano state arrestate, tra cui, importante sottolinearlo, 53 bambini e 221 sono ancora in carcere. Why you find that interesting or important this delegation in Turkey, Kurdistan? What did you find there interesting or important?
Sorry, I cannot hear you very well.
Yeah.
Because of the line.
Yeah, I know. What is your opinion about this delegation? Why it's important this delegation, the role of this delegation?
The reason why I went there basically to see whether that changes has been happened or not inside the movement in Turkish Kurdistan. So what I observed really there, which was very important for me and interesting, that is people involved in setting up and forming local groups, because people think the basic local groups. When I'm talking about local groups, I'm talking about the radical local groups. The local groups, they do not believe in power and they do not believe in authority, because basically the situation in Turkish Kurdistan is like this. There are a couple of power, the power of people in Turkish Kurdistan, and force themselves within the main power, which is the power of the Turkish state. So that is how they believe that they can change the situation by themselves. They can change the situation through building the local groups. They can change the situation through organizing themselves. They can change the situation from starting to make the major change from the bottom of the society, rather than the top of the society. They believe that change has to start again, as I said, from the bottom of the society, and should be a social revolution, not in terms of political. In fact, in terms of culture, in terms of economic, in terms of education, in terms of changing the idea, the mentality of individual. Because just an example, when we had a meeting with the Women's Independent Movement, they were about 9 people there, and they were talking about many things. One of the things they were talking about, they talk about the books they're reading and they discuss it. They talk about the idea, which is they talk about it and discuss it, and again, the initiative they did, basically like setting up a peace camp as a solidarity with the Kobani's women. So when we see this sort of things there, we can believe that, I mean, people can do the change, people can make the change by themselves rather than trying to do it through the political party. Obviously, you cannot deny that there is an influence of PKK in that situation, or in Turkish Kurdistan. But again, I mean, you can see all these local groups, they work for themselves, and they are more or less in some way independent. But again, they are getting together, they have a coordination with the other local groups, and to do activity together. So that is very interesting observation there in Turkey, Kurdistan, which is for me really is important.
Sì, comunque lui è andato lì soprattutto per vedere se i cambiamenti sono reali o no, quali sono i reali cambiamenti nel Kurdistan, che cosa si sta muovendo. Fondamentalmente ha potuto vedere che sì, ci sono dei grossi cambiamenti lì, soprattutto da parte della gente che si muove direttamente attraverso l'auto-organizzazione, organizzandosi lei stessa attraverso i gruppi locali, attraverso le organizzazioni di base, attraverso l'autogestione dei campi profughi che sono autogestiti dai gruppi locali del Kurdistan turco, sia da degli stessi profughi che vengono da Kobani. C'è una grossa attività dei movimenti delle donne che sono direttamente collegati alle donne delle YPG a Kobani, e c'è un costante collegamento, un costante apporto di solidarietà, e tutto questo avviene soprattutto da parte della gente, e quindi questo rafforza i cambiamenti stessi all'interno del PKK e permette dei grandi cambiamenti anche nella zona del Kurdistan turco, permettendo il prepararsi di quelle lotte che si stanno svolgendo lì.
E are there gay or lesbian groups in Diyarbakir?
Sorry?
Are there in Diyarbakir, are there gay or lesbian groups?
I didn't get your last point. What did you say about Diyarbakir? Because as I said, the line is not very clear on my side.
Yeah. Are there gay or lesbian groups in Diyarbakir?
Gay and lesbian groups, yes. There are a couple of groups there, but they cannot obviously disclose themselves openly. They cannot be very open like any other local groups. And when we ask them whether the independent women's movement, the women's, we had the meeting with them, whether they support them, they said they support them and they help them, and they have a very good relation with them. And obviously they coordinate with them as well. So that is quite amazing when you see in a In a town like Diyarbakir compared to London as a little town, that you can see in somewhere like Turkey, which is people, some people think still is a is not a developed country. You can see a people, a woman in that particular town, they believe in the right of to be gay or lesbian. Not just that, even they believe in that they need the support, they need the help, they need to coordinate with them if they wanted to take some action. That is something actually is quite amazing and quite new for the Kurdish women to accept this sort of idea. Not just accept me, as I said, coordinating with them and cooperate with them and support them even.
Sì, ci sono numerosi gruppi LGBT a Diyarbakir, è la cosa abbastanza interessante visto che Diyarbakir comunque è una piccola cittadina. È abbastanza interessante anche il fatto che in una piccola cittadina del Kurdistan turco lo stesso movimento delle donne libere ha un costante collegamento con i gruppi LGBT ed è abbastanza aperto alle istanze dei gruppi LGBT presenti lì a Diyarbakir. Non si muovono molto facilmente, però c'è questo dato importante, cioè della connessione fra i movimenti femminili e i movimenti LGBT.
In Diyarbakir, what about your meeting with the bar association, with the lawyers?
The meeting with the bar association, they are slightly different from the human rights committee in Diyarbakir, because this one they got a salary from the central government, and also from the Turkish government, and also they have a contact with the main bar association in Turkey, and they have about 1,000 lawyers in Kurdistan region, and they work in a different department like a human right and like women and children's rights, like those people, they are basically facing abuse or discrimination or violence from the partner or from the neighbor or from anywhere else. However, they confirm when we ask them whether they have a contact with the police, or the police just listen to them, whether they complain about the police's harassment and about the police while they go there raiding the places or arresting, detaining young people for no reason. And they said no, they can't, they it's no point. They said no, it's not point really to do that because the police doesn't listen to them. So my point is that although they are officials in Diyarbakir and they have a contact with the main bar association in whole Turkey, and again while they get a salary from the central government, but still neither the governor of Turkey of Diyarbakir and not the head of the police in Diyarbakir basically listening to them. That is quite shock, because when we see they are official and they belong to government, but the only thing is different because they basically defend the vulnerable people, they defend the defenseless people like the Kurdish people, like those children or women or elderly people or any other people basically being arrested or harassed by the central government. But in the same time, they mentioned that they are hoping by the next year the situation change, because they believe that the constitution in Turkey will be changed. When the constitution is changed, then things can be changed, because they believe that also Turkey might do some reform, because they wanted to enter the EU, European Union, and and again they are hopeful about the peace process. So because of these three reasons, they think basically they are optimistic about changing the situation by next year, and they are optimistic about the peaceful process reaching some places or some point by next year.
Sì, allora loro, i componenti della delegazione hanno incontrato 5 avvocati dell'Associazione degli Avvocati di Diyarbakir, e gli hanno detto ci sono numerosi avvocati nella regione del Kurdistan che si occupano della difesa dei diritti delle donne e dei bambini o lavorano presso centri di assistenza legale. Gli avvocati gli hanno confermato che circa 2000 studenti sono stati arrestati e tuttora sono in tutta la Turchia, per motivi politici sono tuttora in carcere tra le 3.000 e 4.000 persone, nonostante la Costituzione afferma che non si potrebbe essere arrestati per attivismo politico o per reati d'opinione. L'Associazione degli Avvocati di Diyarbakir è abbastanza ottimista sul processo di pace e sul fatto che questo possa portare a un cambiamento della Costituzione e quindi a eliminare quelle parti che consentono l'arresto anche di bambini in base a una legge turca che prevede che si possa essere arrestati anche da minorenni anche solo per il sostegno verbale o ideologico al PKK o alle organizzazioni indipendentiste curde.
E la delegazione ha incontrato anche il sindacato della regione sud-est dell'Anatolia, responsabile del coordinamento degli aiuti umanitari ai profughi. E, Zaher, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Did you ask me a question? I couldn't hear that.
Yeah. What about the meeting with the Union of the Southeast Anatolian Region?
That was a meeting with with the union. Yes, we had a meeting with them. So what happened? This is a big department or big body, and consists of the representative of the union in the towns in the region. So among them, they have a regular meeting, and also obviously it's right to say that because the political situation in Turkish Kurdistan has became a main problem and also dominated the current situation there. So they have to, even if they want to or not, they have to involve this sort of things. So sometimes they have to do the work again as a union, and also sometimes they have to do work as a political work like that. For instance, I mean, one of the discussion we had with them was the union's support and solidarity to refugees people, and they mentioned that basically they have set up a coordinating committee, and because they themselves consist of 286, if I remember the number, 286 people, and among that 286 people, they chose some people as to be really just concerning about the work has to be done for the refugees from Kobani and also from Sinjar among Yazidis. So that is one of their job. Apart from that, the second job which they do, they maintain the contact, and also they make the new contact with the unions in Middle East or Africa or even in Europe. They can get some support and help, even some financial support, which they provide and supply this support to refugees people, and also they are coordinate between themselves if they have a problem or just simply if they wanted to take action. Let's say, for instance, a strike, because that unions, they presenting some money different. So many different worker department or worker section in there. For instance, some of the workers, they belong to municipalities and some of the workers they belong to construction, the building, this sort of thing, and some other they belong to basically a private company, things like that. So what they have done, they set up the coordination between them, and each of them they have their own union and their own representative, and again on the top of that they have a co-president. So the co-president, they have a two president, one of them man and the other must be woman, and also the number, the percentage of the women there quite high compared to even European country or America or United States or Australia or other places.
Sì, allora hanno incontrato i rappresentanti del sindacato della regione del sud-est dell'Anatolia, che è di fatto l'organizzazione che coordina gli aiuti umanitari per i rifugiati. Sono fondamentalmente 286 membri, di cui il 30% sono donne, molti più comparate alle organizzazioni sindacali europee o del Nord America, che lavorano sostanzialmente molto su questo comitato di coordinamento degli aiuti umanitari, loro hanno un budget che viene quasi per la metà dai comuni della regione, che vengono controllati da partiti affini alle organizzazioni indipendentiste curde di base. Gestiscono, negli ultimi tre mesi sono riusciti a coordinare molti campi rifugiati, sia con profughi provenienti dal Rojava che dal Sinjar. Sono riusciti a sistemare gli yezidi in quattro campi profughi tra Suruc e Diyarbakir. Oltre a questo hanno contatti con la maggior parte con molti sindacati in Africa, in Europa o nell'America del Nord, e organizzano anche scioperi, sono attivamente coinvolti nelle lotte della popolazione curda nella regione del Kurdistan turco.
La delegazione ha visitato anche il campo profughi degli Yazidi, dove vivono oltre 4.000 persone, e Suruc, il campo profughi di Kobani. Zaher, what about the condition of the refugees in the Yazidi camps?
The condition of the refugee, as you all know, basically when people displaced from is places, especially because of the war, not just because of a natural event or natural things that happen, is very complicated and very upsetting and very bad because of the nature of the refugee as well, and placing in somewhere completely for them is different, and they left their land, they left the family behind, they left whatever they have. But in the same time, there is always a difference between the refugees, because there, as I said, there are a couple of types of refugees. The first one, which is they came from Erdia, they came from Sinjar, which is they are a victim of ISIS's attack there. And also, these people, they arrived there quite early because the ISIS is occupied the second town in Iraq by 10th of June, and soon after that, I think it was in August or end of July, they have an attack LBB in and basically whoever they slaughtered, whoever captured, especially women, they did, and the rest managed to escape, and minority of them is rich Iraqi Kurdistan and the other rich Turkish Kurdistan. So these people, as I said, they were about 200,000 people, and obviously divided between there and between Iraqi Kurdistan, Syrian Kurdistan, Turkish Kurdistan, because some of them as well, they went to to Canton of Jazira, which is another canton of Rojava. So these people they are more upset and depressed and basically than the Kobani people because of the different reason, and because first thing is they believe that there was a betray it's been made against them basically by the Kurdish military, or which is they call Peshmerga, because they were so many of them in the region, but they have not actually defend them, and they basically withdraw as soon as the ISIS tried to occupy their place. And that is one of the reasons the second reason, because it was something sudden for them, and they could not manage to bring anything for them with themselves. And they just managed, some of them, to bring the children with them and the elderly people, although many elderly people on the way before reaching the place, they died, unfortunately, because they couldn't tolerate that difficult condition when they walk through the things. And so that is another reason. And the third thing is they don't have really much hope to go back, because still their area and their region has been controlled by the ISIS. And again, they left everything behind, and many of their houses has been destroyed. Many of them cattle has been captured by the ISIS. So these people, they are it's very much different from the Kobani's refugee is happier than them. And again, I mean, the Yazidis, they have because they have so many people, so many children there, and they don't have enough doctor and nurses to look after them, although they are looking after them, but there is no enough things, no enough staff to look after them. There is no ambulance to take them to hospital if they needed to go to hospital. And even if they wanted to go to hospital, they cannot be treated without charging. They have to pay, while they don't have money. And they complain about the quality of the food, and also they said it's a bit cold. They need the clothes. They need basically money. They need the medicine. They need the vehicles, ambulance to take them to hospital. So that situation in Yazidi's camp, but in Kobani's camp, people came from Kobani slightly better, and there was more doctor and staffs actually looking after them according to themselves. And in both camps, there was a basic school has been set up inside the tents for their children to study. And as I said, the Kobani's refugees, they were happier than them, because they knew one day they have to go back, and they will go back sooner or later. And also it's very close to the place they came from. They could see from there. And third thing is because they left the people there, the people is fighting against ISIS, which is, this is for them is important. They were proud of these people, and and fourth reason, because they had a little time to take their children with them, or elderly people, or anything. Yes, they have a very hard time, but the hard time is not on their way from Kobani to Turkey. In fact, the hard time when they arrived on the border, the Turkish soldier didn't let them to get in. And obviously that was a hard time for them, because they had to stay for 72 hours, I think, there without food and without drink. And in the end, under the protests and demo in Turkey and in other places, and some of the countries forced the Turkey to open their border for them to get in. And now they are in Sluis, which is a little town just on the border, living there for the time being.
Allora sì, la situazione per quanto riguarda i profughi è molto differente anche a livello di percezione psicologica fra i profughi del Rojava, di Kobani, e quelli del e quelli che vengono da Shangal, fondamentalmente perché a Kobani c'è stato una l'arrivo dei profughi è stato coordinato e organizzato dalle autorità di Kobani e dallo YPG, che hanno permesso che le intere famiglie arrivassero oltre confine, anche forzando i blocchi delle forze armate turche, mentre per quanto riguarda gli yezidi è stato una fuga precipitosa per molti motivi, per la fuga dei peshmerga, per il fatto che l'ISIS avanzava con un piano preordinato di sterminio degli yezidi, per il fatto che molte persone hanno visto massacrare i propri familiari a Shangal, e quindi c'è anche una componente geografica, cioè Suruc è di fronte a Kobani, quindi i profughi di Kobani possono vedere lo svolgimento dei combattimenti, hanno comunque un collegamento con Kobani. Gli yezidi che vengono da Shangal non sono lontani chilometri dai loro luoghi d'origine, che sono saldamente in cui non si svolge alcun combattimento, sono saldamente controllati dall'ISIS, in cui l'ISIS continua a dare la caccia agli yezidi fuggitivi che si sono nascosti nelle grotte del Jebel Sinjar, e quindi c'è una differenza anche di percezione della propria situazione tra i profughi del Rojava e i profughi yezidi che vengono da Shangal.
Is it true that the Kurdish people are now in control of their municipalities?
Yes, they are, because the Turkish government has no choice, because what they it came under before was basically the governor or the government, central government, nominate people to be the head of the municipality, but because they force the government, that has to be by election, and obviously when you see there is an election there, either the entire residents or citizens in the town Kurdish, and or the very majority of the town they are Kurdish, is always they win by election, and when they won in the last election, and obviously they won, they elect the Kurdish head of the municipality, which is his two heads, one of them man and the other one woman. So that is been done, basically forcing the government to do that. It's not, that's what I'm saying, they force themselves to have a power inside the main power. That power, although there is not much really coordination between municipality and the head of the police, and also the governor in Diyarbakir or in the other towns. And the reason why, because they don't want to support them. The central government don't want to support them. Even in this, a huge number of the refugees came to Diyarbakir, Ansrus, and Mardin. That's another town, Kurdish town in Turkey. And what the support of the Turkish government, only 10% to support the municipality, in order for the municipality to support the refugees come, and the rest of it, which is 90%, came from the ordinary people through the donation of clothes, food, drink, tent, and anything else. So I say in one word, yes, I've been controlled by the Kurdish people, but they don't have a much contact with the central government, because the central government does not really want to admit it or acknowledge it in a term that there is a Kurdish people that are controlling themselves. It's not just that, even the schools, there are some schools, and has not been recognized by the central government. But again, I mean, the people still sending the children to the school, and the teachers going there teaching the children. And also those all of community and groups has been set up to defend the human rights or to defend to detainees and prison. And the people in prison, again, they don't have the support from the government, and the government do not really acknowledge them at all. But people try to force themselves, to force the government, and I'm sure one day the government has no choice, has to really to support it and acknowledge there is another body, there is another power, that is the power of the people. They have no choice apart from basically to support them and coordinate with them.
Sì, allora, quindi sostanzialmente i comuni, le municipalità del Kurdistan turco sono sostanzialmente un'espressione dei gruppi locali, dei sindacati, delle organizzazioni di base, perché ormai nella maggioranza delle municipalità del Kurdistan turco i sindaci sono espressioni del movimento di base curdo. Questo ha creato il governo turco è stato costretto ad accettare la situazione, non potendo, anche per le sue aspirazioni di entrare nell'Unione Europea, non ha potuto fare un atto di forza e cancellare i risultati elettorali di tutto il Kurdistan turco. Però ci sta una situazione in cui le municipalità, i comuni, le autorità elette del Kurdistan turco hanno un collegamento diretto con sindacati, gruppi locali, organizzazioni di base, ma nessun contatto invece con le autorità emanazione del governo centrale, quindi col governo direttamente dal governo centrale, con le forze di polizia, con le forze dell'ordine e con i prefetti nelle loro municipalità.
E il governo turco ha cambiato, lo Stato turco ha cambiato la sua tattica ma non la sua strategia. Qual è l'atteggiamento degli Stati Uniti e che cosa significa il cessate il fuoco da parte del PKK? Turkish government change the tactic but not the strategies. And the attitude, yes, the attitude of the United States. What's the mean of the ending of the ceasefire?
Yes, it's true. I mean, the Turkish government is changing its tactics, but not changing its strategy. Be honest. The Turkish government has got a good opportunity to work on the ceasefire and to work on the peace process, because this this dispute has been going on for the last whole century, since 1921, when the first Turkish government after the Ottoman Empire collapsed basically came to power. And since then the Kurdish people has no right. They simply lost their basic right, and always has been recognized by the Turkish government, whatever was there, as a the Turkish, they living in the mountains. They mean they never ever admitted that there is a Kurdish people, a nation living there, while they were about 20 million people. So however, now this opportunity came up since December 2012, and the PKK has basically announced the ceasefire and ready to enter the peace process. But the Turkish government took it for granted. So as before, that's what I'm saying, the tactics was basically attacking them and fighting them, killing them, and leaving them with no basic right, no anything. But now it's slightly, the tactic has changed, because the tactic, yes, they realize after all this year, after all 19, since the PKK is came to exist, and again since 1984 when they started guerrilla war, since then after 30 years they realize that they cannot, Turkish government realized that they cannot actually resist them, or they cannot actually suppress them by military. So they have to change the tactic. So the tactic is now change, which is, I mean, they do not happy to cooperate with the peace process or those people they conduct in the peace process. And again, they are not happy, I'm talking about the Turkish government, are not happy or not ready really to coordinate with the municipalities under the control of Kurdish people. And still, the Turkish government has not stepped a major step to recognize that the Kurdish people actually has to have their own right, and the things has been changed, especially when they wanted to enter the EU. So that's why I'm saying the tactic has changed, but the strategy is still there, but the tactic has changed according to their according to the Turkish government's interests, because at the time their interests or the interests of the military general was basically to fight them by weapon, but now they fight them by no coordination with them, and basically no contacting with them, not giving them authority, not take forward the peace process. Just they wanted to kill in the time. They think it's just by time everything will be disappeared. The more time is going on about that, they do not have a response to peace process. The Kurdish question or the Kurdish problem will be lighter, but in fact that not, because in the end people do not, even as PKK is happy to go to negotiate with the government for nothing, and still I believe the Kurdish people in there, the way they have taken it, by building the local groups, by building the committees, by building commune among themselves, all this movement there, there's no way can stop them. They fight for their right. They fight for social justice. So that's why I'm saying is the Turkish government has changed their tactics, but not strategy.
Sì, fondamentalmente appunto lo Stato turco ha cambiato la sua tattica, ma non la sua strategia, perché in questo momento la politica dello Stato turco è di richiedere alle autorità di Kobani, allo YPG, di abbandonare le armi e così consentirebbe accesso ai profughi, ma questo aprirebbe la strada a una cosiddetta zona cuscinetto lungo il confine, una occupazione militare di fatto turca del Rojava, che è funzionale all'imperialismo neo-ottomano che guida in politica estera l'era Erdogan per quanto riguarda lo Stato turco. Da questo punto di vista ci sono molte cose che rischiano di far deragliare il processo di pace, che comunque in Turchia è sempre stato osteggiato dai vertici militari, che sono comunque in costante concorrenza col potere più propriamente politico per il controllo dello Stato turco. E ci sono molti particolari che potrebbero comunque far deragliare il processo di pace, che comunque farebbe fallire la rivoluzione sociale, perché toglierebbe la parola alle organizzazioni di base, ai sindacati, ai gruppi locali, e ridarebbe la parola alle armi, soprattutto perché comunque gli Stati Uniti continuano e l'Unione Europea continuano a tenere il PKK nella lista nera delle organizzazioni terroristiche. Qualora deragliasse il processo di pace da parte del PKK, di fronte al ritorno alla guerra aperta non ci sarebbe altra soluzione che il ritorno alla guerra di guerriglia, però questo riporterebbe tutto lo scontro sul piano militare, facendo fallire ogni aspirazione di rivoluzione sociale nel Kurdistan turco.
E dunque la situazione è molto tesa e delicata. Il processo di pace sembra essersi fermato e adesso gli chiederò, insomma, se secondo lui questi fattori possono deviare la trasformazione dal basso, la rivoluzione in atto. Do you think this situation, these factors can, your opinion, derail the revolution?
Yeah, I mean, there is nothing actually guaranteed. There is nothing. I mean, there is always basically a fact or some reason really for derail the social revolution. I mean, one of them, if PKK is announcing the war, obviously that's no good. Again, I mean, Ferdinand Abu fed up with the peace process while the central government does not take it forward or does not take it seriously, that will be a disaster for the Kurdish people and also for the Turkish community in the same time, because it's taking back all this effort has been made and now it's going back to the same square. That is one reason. The second thing is basically, if the Turkish government do not want this to take it serious, and they want to really it's just killing the time and take it for granted, that's not good in the end. So that is in the end is you cannot leave the peace process like this. You have to work on it. As I said before, this is a good opportunity for everybody, not just for the Kurdish people in Turkey, even for the European country, even for United States and their allies in the region and the Turkish government to take this opportunity seriously. And the third thing is basically Turkish government should realize that it doesn't need really to support the terrorist organization like ISIS, like Al-Qaeda, or like Bahrain Nusra. That's another terrorist organization. So, because this is maybe at the moment it's in their interest, but definitely in the long term they are not in the interest. These people, they do not work in the interest of Turkish government or any government in the region or any country, because they have their own agenda, they have their own plan. They wanted to create the power which is 1400 years ago has been exist, while we can see the Turkish government is not really as a Turkish government, as an Islamic government. It's a mixture. If you look at the economic is or education or political, you can see slightly it's more an Islamic way, because no way the Turkish government tried to control people and taking it back to 100 or 200 years ago and force them to basically oblige to Sharia, Islamic Sharia, or the other Islamist religion principle. So they needed to stop supporting and solidarity with the ISIS and the other terrorist group. If they do that, obviously that's another thing probably affecting the Turkish society and also the Kurdish community. And other factor, other reason is that the Turkish government, we know that for a long, long time there was an internal struggle between the military general and the politician in Turkey, and always all the time there was a military generals, they were more in a more strong position, and always the war with the Kurdish, it was in their interest. That, but now under Erdogan is that struggle has became lighter, because it could manage to do a coup d'etat against them. But that does not mean the military generals is gone forever. Yes, many of them is retired and a few of them in prison, but still there is that tendency, there is that feeling among them, and still they have a power. So that power can be revived. Can be revived if the spy network in the region or in the world or in the Western country, from any of them, they work on them, they can basically tell of them and support them to revive and to be, make it stronger, to have a coup d'etat again. I mean, conspiracy against the military conspiracy against the central government. Well, by then, when they do that, obviously they are not the military general. They are not concerned about the peace process at all. And what they do in the end, they withdraw the peace process and start war again. So this is all a main factor to derail the social revolution.
Sì, comunque continuando su tutto ciò che può far deragliare la rivoluzione sociale, cioè fondamentalmente il fatto che al governo turco non interessa il processo di pace, perché un fallimento del processo di pace, come abbiamo detto prima, farebbe fallire la rivoluzione sociale, e questo è quello che a cui più tiene il governo turco, anche perché continua ad esserci una sostanziale complicità di Erdogan con l'ISIS, visto che comunque la politica di Erdogan, oltre che in politica estera, ha un imperialismo neo-ottomano improntata su un forte conservatorismo di stampo islamico, e in tutto questo c'è stato comunque nei tre anni della guerra civile siriana un costante appoggio da parte sia delle potenze occidentali che delle potenze regionali, soprattutto quelle del Golfo, della penisola arabica, verso l'ISIS, verso Al-Qaeda, verso Jabhat al-Nusra, fondamentalmente per far fallire quella che era la rivoluzione siriana, anche perché si è in una fase di totale stallo in cui ormai la cosiddetta opposizione moderata ad Assad non esiste più. Assad ormai è tornato a controllare metà del territorio siriano, l'altra metà è controllata dall'ISIS, e tutto questo comunque mette dei pesi alle possibilità di una reale rivoluzione sociale, sia in Siria che nel Kurdistan turco.
Zaher, if you agree, we can close this.
Okay, thanks very much, comrades, for giving me opportunity to talk on your radio.
Thank you.
All the best to all of you, okay? And
okay,
take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To you too. In solidarity,
right. Okay.
Zaher.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Ricordo che siamo su Radio Onda Rossa, in diretta era Zaher Baer del gruppo Haringey, Solidarity Group di Haringey e del Kurdish Anarchist Forum. È un articolo che è stato pubblicato sul sito www.anarchistan.org. E ricordo, noi siamo compagni del gruppo anarchico Carlo Gaffiero della Federazione Anarchica Italiana di Roma, e voglio ricordare due iniziative ancora. Una di stasera, che è la città dell'utopia, dalle ore 19:30, e soprattutto la nostra, che è domenica 30 novembre dalle ore 19 allo spazio anarchico, 19 luglio, in via Rocco da Cesinale 18, metro B Garbatella, in cui ci sarà una cena incontro, report e dirette con compagni appena tornati e compagni curdi, e libri. Ci sarà uno spazio informazioni su quanto sta accadendo ancora, con degli aggiornamenti in Kurdistan e come si sta organizzando la solidarietà. E chiaramente la resistenza delle partigiane e dei partigiani di Kobani continua, e fortunatamente i piani strategici di Turchia e paesi occidentali in mainstream si sta scontrando con l'eroica resistenza delle partigiane e dei partigiani curdi, che stanno resistendo contro tutte le previsioni e stanno difendendo la città e i civili che sono rimasti a Kobani. E determinanti sono stati anche a bloccare la strategia del governo turco, sono state anche le azioni lungo il confine ad opera degli anarchici del DAF, della sinistra rivoluzionaria turca, dei movimenti e dei partiti curdi, degli attivisti internazionali che stanno dando vita alle catene umane, ai gruppi di osservazione e scudi umani per difendere la popolazione dei villaggi in territorio turco vicino Kobani. Chiaramente noi anarchici ci riconosciamo in questa lotta, ne siamo parte contro la tirannia degli stati, chiaramente del capitalismo e delle religioni. Ovunque Kobani, ovunque resistenza, ripeto l'appuntamento, domenica 30 novembre, dalle ore 19, spazio anarchico 19 luglio, potete trovare tutti i riferimenti sul nostro sito che è www.carlocafiero.org e ci vediamo domenica e spero anche stasera. Ciao a tutti e tutte.
Arrivederci.